Welcome back to the Mobile Home Investing Lessons podcast with your host, John Fedro. Tune in weekly. Plus, listen to past episodes designed to make you money, save you time, and give you confidence as an active mobile home investor. Now, here's your host, John Fedro.
All right, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us. We are here with the Mobile Home Investing Lessons podcast number 20. Thank you so much, guys. Special guests here. This is a video podcast with Michael and Steven. Thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you very much, John. It's our pleasure.
Yeah. This is awesome. This is so cool. From I'm in Texas right now. You're not the opposite side of the country, but you're in Maine right now, or that's where you're businesses and where you both are. Awesome state. I'm from right underneath there in New Hampshire, born and raised. Please tell me, what have you, we've had a relationship now for maybe a year, less than a year, 6 months?
Maybe just less than a year.
Yeah, I think February is when we kind of got started.
Okay.
With the business model.
We actively started, you know, really pursuing things in February, but we've been talking with you since December of last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, at least. Yeah.
And we both heard of you from Bigger Pockets, I believe.
Great sites. Free Bigger Pockets plug.
Hear that, Jay? Yeah.
So before that, any real estate experience? I mean, you're both still now both full-time employed, both full-time employees.
Yeah, part-time employed for me and then part-time mobile home stuff. So yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Would you say that your partnership, you're both equally doing things as much as possible or
one person? Yeah. I mean, I'm a physical therapist. I operate full-time in a home health setting, so I can create my own schedule and have that level of flexibility. So yeah, we both synergize pretty well, I believe, with our daily routine.
What we found is things really ebb and flow, you know? So it's like, so sometimes one of us will carry more of the workload, you know, while the other person's busy or tied up. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of flows back in the other direction at some point. And so, you know, we try and keep it balanced and it's been working good for us.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, with a part-time job, with a full-time job, for the folks listening, when are your busiest hours? Because is it lunch break? Is it after work? Before work? Weekends? Obviously.
Busiest hours, just in terms of like our overall life, or are you talking about in regards specifically to mobile home?
I should have said mobile home investing. Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I think
that's a good question.
That's a very good question. Well, I think part of what's helped frame our workload is we developed a scope of duty. So we've assigned certain roles for each of us. And like Michael said, we ebb and flow as, you know, the situation or the deal needs. We have made it mandatory that, you know, we take Saturdays off. That's just what's worked for us. So nothing happens on Saturdays until 5 p.m. and then we get right back into the fray.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, probably around Friday over the weekend, that's when we tend to get a lot more volume of phone calls. You know, that's when, you know, a lot of people, whether it's looking to set up moving a mobile home, rehabbing a mobile home, or just speaking with, you know, people with different opportunities, that's when we probably have the most.
Yeah, I would agree. Definitely weekends, you know, seem to, you know, people have some free time. They can start thinking about, you know, if they want to sell their mobile home, they can call us. If they want to buy one, they see one of our ads and they respond to that. But, you know, I'm a big believer in letting people go to voicemail. It's a great screening tool, and you get back to them, you know, when it's convenient for you. So we have a good voicemail set up that allows us to, you know, to let people kind of pre-screen themselves as they come in to the voicemail, and then we call them back when it's convenient for us. You know,
not a live person, just a voicemail.
Yeah, just typically.
Excellent. I love that. You mentioned before about moving homes, and in my opinion, it's not a question of if you're going to move them, but just when you're going to move them in most areas. So I love that. We'll talk about that a little bit later. How many homes have you moved in and set up?
We've only moved one.
Okay.
But just boy, one. What did we learn?
That was rich.
No, it was fantastic because it's so expanded our team as far as the plumber, the electrician, relationships with park managers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a very valuable learning experience, certainly. And I think we just sold that about, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it took about a month to rehab. Yeah.
2 weeks ago, probably.
Well, we're already into it. Let's find this out. So you you responded to an ad, or someone got in touch with you that had to have the home moved.
Yeah, it could Craigslist not... ad actually. I think we found them on Craigslist. They had an ad that said, you know, mobile home for sale, $5,000. You know, I thought immediately, well, okay, that's in the price range. Let's find out, you know, if it's really worth $5,000. Mm-hmm. They were located probably about 30 miles north of us. And so, you know, we went out, checked out the home. It definitely needed, you know, quite a bit of work. And so we talked them down to about, what was it, $3,250?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, $3,250, and we're able to do it on payments. So we gave them $500 down and then $275 a month for 10 months.
Yep, 10 months.
Yeah. So yep. we were able to, you know, get into it for that piece, you know, low money down.
Were you out of curiosity, did you have... Oh, I'm hearing a little bit of an echo. Oh, no, it stopped. That was weird.
Okay.
I'll just edit this part out. Did you obtain a... Or did he have a lien on the home?
Because you were... No.
Okay. That's what it sounded like. So the title, you took possession of the title. He trusted you. You wrote up other paperwork to give him the rest of his money due in payments.
Right.
But exactly. he did not have a lien on the title. Excellent. I just wanted to touch base on that because that may slow you down or prevent you from moving the home. Some movers want to see the title, see there's no liens. When you move it into a park, sometimes they want to see that. Other times they don't care. Hey, give me the money and I'll move it for you.
Yeah. So far, none of the homes that we bought, 5 homes, and not one of them has there been a title.
Yeah. And at least in the state of Maine, if the home is older than 6 or 7 years, the state doesn't care about title. They're like, just bill of sale is all you need.
Yeah. Whoever's the owner on tax record, who's paying the taxes, they're like, that's the owner. So, you know, it's like...
Has that caused any problems or issues that you've seen, or is that just kind of business as usual?
Yeah, it's been business as usual. I think the only issue has just been in our own minds. Like, are we doing the right thing? You know, are we protected, you know, when we mm-hmm. do this? And after talking with the DMV here, you know, a couple of times and having them say, look, we won't reissue you a title. You know, we just don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, just get a bill of sale. We're finally like, all right, well, if the state's telling us, just get a bill of sale, you know, and make sure that we switch the taxes over. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The
hopefully that doesn't bite us later, right?
No, right. The with this home that has to be moved, so you obtained a bill of sale, you transferred it over into your name first?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you moved it into a park. Did you already know which park you were going to move it into, or did Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, we were working with a couple of parks to try and get, you know, good incentives. But we really knew which park we wanted to move it to.
Yep.
Reason why? That particular park?
It's the largest park in the state. You know, it has the best ratings. It's a 4-star park. And the move-in incentive was they were not going to charge us a move-in fee. And I think they weren't going to charge us lot rent every other month for the first 6 months just while we were rehabbing it. So... That was the best deal we got.
Yeah. And we had just heard locally that was the most desirable park.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they allowed dogs. It was all ages, you know, family park, you know. And we had heard other things about some of the other parks, you know. It was like, you know, they're really hard to work with. You know, they are just, you know, just difficult, you know, with their tenants and stuff. And so we said, okay, you know, we want to go to the park where the most people want to move because that'll help us sell the home faster. So
absolutely. You can choose which area you want to bring it to. You can choose the park. Some parks, there's more. It's interesting, like from, I don't know if you've seen this, but you know, there's 10 parks and in one of them, for some reason, will have a high demand of sales in it, of cash or bank finance sales. Like everyone that has cash is going to this one park for some weird reason.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's nicer than the others. It's just, so you can choose where you want to move it to, the coast, inland, you know, and then you can have value added to that. So the park that you moved it to, not the best move-in incentives, what, 3 months free lot rent?
Yeah.
Because every other, and then wasn't going to charge you a move-in fee. But that's something. So you moved it in. The park manager's obviously pretty content or happy or
thrilled? Very happy. You know, it ended up things kind of got twisted around with either our communication about what the incentives were, because although we didn't pay a move-in fee when we moved the home, they charged our buyer a move-in fee, which is money left on the table, because that's money could have gone into our pockets, right? So, you know, we were a little bit perturbed about that. Like, you know, geez, that's not really helpful to us, you know, because ultimately that's just money off from the sale price that we could have charged. So I think that taught us the lesson that, you know, when you communicate with somebody, try and get stuff in writing, you know, even if it's just an email, you know, you said this, drive for clarity, something you always say, drive for clarity, you know, just make sure that you really know what's being said, what the agreement is, you know, because otherwise, you know, you end up with them saying later, oh, I don't think I said that, or that's not what I meant, or you're like, okay, I just left almost $1,000 on the table.
That big of a deposit?
Well, $750, I think.
Yeah, so, $750.
Yeah,
that's considerable. Now, was that the only lesson learned in moving this home?
Oh, not at all.
No.
I was pretty sure that was the answer.
A lot of them were positive too. You know, I mean, we got to, you know, vet several different rehab teams, and like I said, we met with, you know, we ended up getting several good plumbers and electricians under our belt who still work with us today.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like I told you, it took us a full month, I think, to rehab the home, but 2 weeks of that were because nobody could get to it just because the market was so in high demand for handyman,
yeah.
And it did need, you know, a few items done to it. Yeah, you know, things you discover along the way that you didn't pick up with the initial inspection.
Yeah.
What were a couple of those things?
You know, they're overall, I mean, this was a 1997 80 by 14 foot home. You know, the roof was solid. The siding was good. It had a sliding glass door for one of the entryways that we ended up having to remove because it would have been cheaper to remove it and put in windows than redo the siding and everything, because everything was essentially rotted. Yeah.
So the home had some you know, roof leaks and stuff like that, and they replaced the roof afterwards. But what had happened is the water that had come in through the roof had gone down into the walls, and it completely rotted out the framing for a couple of doors, one of them being the sliding glass door, another one being an entry door off from the laundry room. And once they pulled out the sliding glass door, they looked down through the wall cavity and realized that most of the studs in a section were completely rotted out. Insulation, you know, was just crumpled at the bottom of the wall cavity. And so we ended up pretty much taking out a good section of one of the walls on the exterior, sistering the studs, and then replacing the plywood on the outside, and going back over it with a vinyl siding. So, you know, when you start tearing into things, you start seeing stuff.
Anything you could have done in hindsight to possibly, I mean, you don't have X-ray vision, of course.
Right. I think, you know, I was the first one to go out and look at the home. And, you know, one thing that I've just kind of picked up on is that, you know, it's okay to, you know, grab a wall and shake it a little bit, you know, push on it, you know, see what happens. And just knowing now that, you know, when a roof has leaked and you see signs of that, you know, whether it's soft spots in the floors, around doors, you know, around windows, whatever, that there's a good chance that there's something wrong inside the wall too. You know, so I think just knowing that in your mind kind of allows you to say then to the seller, you know, look, soft spots on the floor, not that big of a deal. But if the roof's been leaking, that probably means there's something wrong inside the wall too. Mm-hmm. So we're possibly going to have to rip this wall open. It's just a negotiating tool. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you can just add that to your conversation and then say, you know, because we're taking the risk of what might be inside this wall, you know, we can't give you the $3,250. We're only going to be able to give you $2,000. Mm-hmm. You know?
And that's legitimate as well. I mean, you kind of have to assume it's the worst.
You got to assume it's the worst, right? You know, that's it.
Yeah.
With regards to the contractors, handyman, we could have a whole five hour long segment on that.
We could.
What's some, like, one or two pieces of advice for someone that, you know, is looking at building their own, well, team, one or two or three people, Yeah, what's some good quick advice on that, if you could?
What do you think, Steve?
I would say try to get several different entities or handyman groups to come out and inspect the home in a close time period. So try to get three of them to come out within an hour, 15, 20 minutes apart. So hopefully there's a little bit of overlap and you understand that, you know, or they understand that there is that level of competition. And it worked for us because we would both be at the home. And if they did do that, I could take one group. Oh, nice. He could manage the other group. So it did work. And that worked out pretty well for us. You know, it did. So I would say that was one of the lessons I kind of took away.
Yeah. I think one of the big ones that I've taken away is just clarifying the relationship and the expectation with your handyman. Mm-hmm. You know, and the way that we do that is through a scope of work document that we lay out, you know, here's what we want done. We ask them to, you know, tell us in terms of labor and materials, you know,
cost.
What the cost is going to be for each item. And then just clarifying, you know, start date, end date. If you're not finished by this time, then there's a $50 a day penalty. It's not really a penalty. It's a cost to doing business for us because we're holding the property longer.
It's a completion incentive.
Exactly. It's a completion incentive. Do what you say you're going to do, right? Don't tell us that you're going to get it done in 1 week and have it done in 1 month.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, you kind of get in that situation with a handyman, you know, who says they're going to do one thing, they do another thing. And what do? You know, it's like, you know, you can be in a tough spot at that point. It also clarifies, you know, how they're going to get paid. You know, are we going to give them 50% up front and 50% at the end? Are we going to do 30-30-30? You know, so it's like a little bit in the beginning to help them get started, a little bit in the middle to help them keep going, you know, and then the final 30% to incentivize them to actually finish the job. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been number one for me, you know, is just clarifying all the expectations and the relationship through that document. And I guess the second piece for me is the final walkthrough, going through and checking their work and making sure that it's what you expected to be done, the way you expected it to be done, and that it's finished, that you don't need to have them go back and touch up several little things. Because after you pay them, their incentive to come back is almost zero unless they know that you're going to do a lot more business with them and you're trying, and they're really trying to keep you happy. So, you know, definitely getting that punch list at the end so that you can, you know, just say, okay, you know, I need you guys to come back, touch up X, Y, and Z, and then, you know, we'll settle up for the final balance.
You inspect if you're going to give them any sort of draws or any sort of payments, or do you inspect regularly or get daily pictures if they're doing something or not so much?
I think that's part of our process that we're still kind of working out. I think that we'd like to do more regular inspections on the home. We do drop by every once in a while just to see how things are going. But up to this point, we haven't quite got that piece of our system worked out to a science.
Sure.
And that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you for uploading that scope of work that you mentioned to the Facebook group. That was really tremendously valuable.
Yeah.
Thank you. No, and I've pointed a number of folks there for that. So
that's great. I'm glad that's being used.
Oh yeah, seriously. Talking still about kind of rehabs and handymen. A number of homes I sell are handyman specials, very livable, and we get them to a certain condition. What have you been finding in your area now that you have about how many deals on under your belt?
Five.
Yes. All right. High five. Are you finding that your buyers, and I suppose there's a bunch of buyers out there for whatever type of home you have, but the condition that your business is getting them to, do you find it's you get them to a certain condition and sell it as is, or sell it as a light handyman special, or are you having your handyman do almost everything? I mean, is it?
I think it depends on the type of market we're working with. As we get more rural, I've kind of gotten the impression, you know, Mike, correct me if you know I'm wrong here, but I've gotten the impression with two of our properties that are up in northern Maine that there's more people who are more of the handyman inclination, like, you know, I'm not licensed to do this, but I don't mind putting in the grit and effort. I took that Home Depot course a while back.
That's right.
So there's more, and then, you know, we live in Brunswick, which is in the mid-coast area, and it seems like there's a higher inclination for people to pay the more money for the move-in fee and do maybe light handyman work, such as painting the walls or, you know, replacing the occasional cupboard.
Yeah.
So I would say that's the big shift is, you know, what I've seen, but
yeah. I mean, up to this point, all five homes have been handyman specials at some level. Some of them needed more work than others. We have one right now that we're yet to sell. We've been marketing it now for a while. We've got quite a bit of interest in it, and it's beyond a handyman special. Like this thing, you know, the roof is
there's a side story to this.
Gone. There is a side, good side story to this. You know, it's like you can walk into the home, you know, during a rainstorm and see water dripping out of the ceiling, you know. So it's, you know, it's in fairly rough condition. It'll probably take $2,000 to $3,000 and some sweat equity just to make it livable. And we've been trying to dump that off for cheap, you know, just so we don't have to deal with it right now. So
then what was the thought, obviously, that comes to mind is maybe why'd you buy this home? Or what was the thought problem? I mean, it's obviously going to be profitable.
That's a great question. So it came as part of a package deal. There is this park that's about 17 miles north, 20 miles north of us?
Something like that.
It's you know, local guy. He owns several parks in Maine and also in Florida. And he's getting to his sunset years, so he's looking to unload them. And it was part of an incentive, which was, hey, look, I'll give you this one home in the same park, pretty much move-in ready. Doesn't need anything done, 1993, three-bedroom, two-bath. I'll give it to you for this awesome price. And we're like, oh, that is a good price. You know, it fits your model. And he said, the caveat is you have to buy this guy. I won't make you pay for this guy, but when you get your move-in fee for this first home, you lateral over and cover this guy.
Yeah.
And we looked at it, and we're like, okay, now is there anything else you can do? And he said, look, you know, I like what you guys are doing. We've sat down with them a few times to talk, just kind of what our mission is and what we want to do in the area. And, you know, he's made it, you know, verbalized that he would be inclined to sell us some of his parks when he does retire and go to Florida.
Yeah.
So it was partly, you know, we got that awesome home with the 2-for-1 and also would kind of open the door for potential further dealings with this gentleman down the road in the next year or so.
Yeah,
because he's open to owner financing the park to us. He's verbalized that, and you know, we've done a few other things with the town tax records to look at the whole park schematics in detail. But that was kind of it. So it was a unique situation, which gave us more on our plate than we would ever have had. I was like, Mike, this is a dump. We don't want it. You know, this is like $10,000 of money. I can see it right now.
I think I talked Steven into buying it. Actually. So I was like,
this is not something we can rehab in a week. This is chronic issue after chronic issue.
We have to tear it down. We're not sure yet. No, I'm kidding. But a little more background on that. We actually, the first home, the one that was in good condition, we got the lead for that off from some of our bandit signs.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is we went in, we talked with the seller. He was asking $5,000 for it. It needed no work to sell it. You know, basically said, you know, $5,000, you know, you're in the ballpark, you know, but, you know, here's what we can do for you, cash and then in payments. And we were like this close to buying it from him probably for $3,000 cash, which would have been an awesome deal. Great deal. And the park owner came in and sniped it.
He took my word right out of my mouth.
He bought it right out from underneath us. He paid the $5,000. And then he called us and he said, you know, I'm getting ready to go to Florida for the rest of the winter, you know. So he said, you know, I'm willing to give you this for $6,000, you know. And he said, but at the same time, you got to buy this other one that I just got back from an eviction for $3,000. And we went and saw the other one. We told him, we said, look, we don't even buy homes like this usually, but if we did, we'd have to take it for free. And he said, you know, can't do that. You know, I can make money off from this, you know, 100 different ways. I just don't have the time. So if you want it, you know, here's what you got to do. And what it came down to is that we decided that we wanted to build a relationship with this guy. You know, we wanted to get into his good graces. And the way that we could do that was by solving his problem. Mm-hmm. His problem was he's going to Florida. He can't manage the rehab on this. You know, he didn't want to deal with it. And so what would, you know, what could we do? We could take him off his hands, play his game. And at the closing, as we're, you know, solving his problem, you know, I asked him point blank, you know, he said, is there anything else, you know, that I can do for you? You know, I'm willing to help you guys out, whatever you need. And I said, well, I said, you know, when are you considering selling your park? And I said, you know, because we'd be interested in buying that too. And he said, he kind of chuckled and he said, you know, I actually am starting to think about, you know, selling it. He said, you know, why don't you guys make me an offer? So we just kind of put the wedge in there at the same time for the park. It's a great little park, you know, nice big lots, you know, heavily wooded. So it's very private, you know, definitely a very unique property. And so we've had conversations with him since then, built a great relationship. And he said, you know, you guys remind me of myself, you know, when I was your age. He says, I want to make the offer of the park to you first, you know, so make me an offer. I'm not putting it up for sale right now. He said, let's see if we can work something out. And he's willing to carry the paper on it.
That's so sick. Yes, that's how it happens. That, I mean, that's, yes. And how was that the first, it didn't even take 10 or 20 interactions with him, right? That was one of the first times that.
Yeah, that was like the fourth or fifth interaction. Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. I've heard that a bunch, calling around different park sellers around the country. You always hear these, well, not always, but there's a lot of stories like, the park owners get the park back because they tried to sell it to the handyman or they tried to owner finance it to the park manager. And the handyman has no business owning the park. The park manager still probably doesn't have any business owning the park. And so, yeah, they the owners don't want to – I don't know if they don't want to just go through the work of selling it or the negotiation factor. So they just give it to people that they kind of know.
And they trust.
Right. And that could be you too.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, I mean, ultimately, you know, we're looking for more buy and hold type deals. Mm-hmm. And having a park kind of gives you the best of both worlds. You got the buy and hold with renting out the lots, and then you can, at some level, control the deals that are happening in the park.
Yeah.
So,
question with that, what was your thought process with, because you've wanted a park before you did your first mobile home deal, or no? Was it
kind of a. It's not something we considered, no.
Okay.
We both come from, you know, previous to this, we were both invested in real estate as a buy and hold. So, you know, this is something a little new.
Okay. Yeah. We're picking it up just, I mean, you can't, as soon as you start, I mean, it's like no hold, you know, pedal to the metal kind of stuff. Now you're looking at parks, making offers, going back to the handyman specials. We talked about that, and I want, you know, the folks listening to understand, you know, some of the homes you get, you're going to rehab to a certain condition. Some you're going to paint and do everything, depending on the exit strategy. But you really have to know your tenant buyer and their firm, not that they, you know, their firm desire that they would rather do some repairs if you can get them into the home for a cheaper move-in fee. Maybe not that the home's not any cheaper, but, you know, the total move-in is going to be more attractive to them. They would prefer, like, stop what you're doing. I will take the home as is. Yeah. And then we are getting it to a point where, like you said, there's all different types of handyman specials. And if you can send – it's, I don't know if you've experienced this, but if you can send people to the home and they think it's one way, over the phone sometimes if I'm not having them watch a video of it before they go and see it, I'll kind of explain it a little bit worse than it is. I'll make the repairs seem a little bit – more in depth. That way, when they get there, they're pleasantly surprised. Like, this isn't a rehab spec. Like, this is a, you know. So anyway, it's just.
That's great. I think you know, our whole experience with the handyman special has been, and we've talked this over quite a bit. You know, sometimes we were like, man, we want to go all out on this home. We want to rehab it so it's beautiful inside. And then when we start computing what it's going to cost us versus what our return is going to be, we start to think, and how long we're going to have to hold it for. Mm-hmm. You know, now we're going to have to hold it for an extra 30 days because we want to get all this work done to it. You know, we can't even really market it until that point because when people walk in, if you say it's turnkey, and they walk in, you're halfway through the rehab process, and they're like, this is not turnkey. Then it's like, so you're kicking yourself in the butt in a lot of ways. When we buy a home now, we can almost immediately start marketing it because it at least looks, you know, usually about the same condition of when we sell it. But we go in and we take care of the chronic issues, you know, soft floors, you know, anything like that, that really needs to be taken care of. And so we're able to market it sooner. We're usually able to get more interest in it sooner and sell it sooner for a better return on investment mm-hmm. by not putting more time and money into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, a couple of times we've almost bit the bullet and gone for the full rehab. But honestly, just looking at what we've done so far, we're not going to be able to make enough more money on it to justify doing mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. So, and to piggyback on that, what we've kind of played around with recently is finding a model of which we could kind of standardize how much money do we put into a home mm-hmm. versus how much cash flow do we get out of that
home. Absolutely.
And whether it's something as one-dimensional as for every $1,000 put towards this home, is that going to equate to $100 a month cash flow? Or like, what will the model be? Just to kind of help us give us a quick framework when we're going through the home and saying, okay, you know, it's going to be this much and this is what we can do. So we can have more of a clarity and standardization for an efficient model.
Absolutely. So that brings us back to last deal that we just sold, which was the home that we moved. So
I was so proud of that.
Oh my God. So thankful to sell that home because we went into it for way more than we expected. The move itself, like, okay, you know, we thought moving it was going to cost us a couple of $1,000, you know, mm-hmm. to move it, get it leveled, get the plumbing, the heating, you know, all that stuff, electrical hooked back up, mm-hmm. get it skirted. We were thinking, you know, probably $2,000. It's more like $5,000.
Yeah.
You know, so right there, you know, big lesson learned. You know, when you move a mobile home, it's not as easy as just parking the thing and unhooking the hitch and saying, there you go, you're good. You could move in.
And you didn't even take out the fact that we had to close out, you know, and get all the paperwork and permits ready to move the home and then the new permits for the town we moved it to.
There was a lot of driving back and forth, you know, between the towns to, mm-hmm. you know, deal with, you know, permits and taxes and all that.
Great learning experience, though. Great learning experience.
Oh, crap. I wish I'd asked some questions on the Facebook page about this, you know?
Yes.
Gosh, you know, what do I have to think about when I move a mobile home? Because if I had done that, I could have, you know, I don't know.
How many movers did you end up talking to or getting?
We spoke to about two or three movers, and they were all kind of in the same ballpark, which out here is, you know, if you just want them to move it from point A to point B, it's around $1,500. But all they'll do is they'll put it on the pads and that's it. They won't set up anything. No plumbing, electrical, none of that.
Right.
You know, the ones that would, you know, assist with, you know, skirting it and all that, they might be an extra $1,000, which is what we found would cost to have a plumber come out and an electrician come out to do it anyway. So, you know, more or less. You're probably about $2,500 to $3,000 would be start to finish.
And that's basically just labor costs. Mm-hmm. That's not including the plumbing supplies. That's not including any electrical supplies. That's not including the permits or the skirting costs. Who knew skirting was so expensive? What the heck is that all about? Just plastic, right?
No, when it had skirting when it moved, but when you moved it to the new location, it wasn't the same height or it was on a different angle.
The skirting could be reused. Thankfully, I think we reused probably 75%, 50% of the skirting that was on it because it was on a really unlevel lot, so some of it was really long,
mm-hmm.
and we were able to reuse that. But then the rest of the stuff was like 2 inches too short. You know what I mean? So you're like,
put that on the back of the home. Nobody will see that.
That's right.
But you know,
we got a good
buyer in there now. You know, he gave us a nice, good size down payment for the home. Yep. So we're good.
So yeah, so just some numbers on that deal. Cost us $3,250 to buy it. About, I'm going to say roughly $5,000 to move it, get everything set up, skirting, plumbing, electrical, all that kind of stuff. And then all in after we were done rehabbing it, we were about $13,000 into it,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, doesn't really fit our model now that we look at it because when we sold it for $3,000 move-in fee and then $660 a month in payments.
Very, so,
pretty reasonable.
Right.
You know, I mean, that almost, you know, almost gets you 100% ROI in the first year, but not quite. And, you know, what we found is that we could have bought two homes for the price that we went into that one. And we could have gotten $500 a month out of both of those homes in terms of, you know, cash flow, and then probably $2,000, $2,500 in move-in fees mm-hmm. out of both those homes.
This was a 3-2
that it you was moved? Yeah.
And it was a 97?
Yep.
Yeah. So
For those, there's a couple different tiers of mobile homes, in my opinion. The lower, you know, the ones that you're all in for under $10,000, under $8,000, we can sell those for normally like an average of five years of payments.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes more, 6, 7, 8. And then the newer ones, and I say newer, but like 97, 95, yeah. something like that, or newer, those ones you can sell, and I mean, maybe you didn't, but for a minimum, I'm finding of 10 years. So the numbers are, you know, they're skewed, but they're, yeah, and you're not making your money back for maybe 2 years, but you have another 8 years of cash flow. But then you made 6 sticks. I mean, that's impressive. How many years of cash flow will that be?
8 years.
That's awesome. Yeah, perfect. Okay, so around the similar. Yeah, excellent.
But yeah, I think what helps is that time frame. And then again, I think, you know, just the learning experience, because now we have those resources available. We have the working knowledge base of what to expect now going forward. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, the first year of any business I hear, you know, it's a huge learning curve, not just for our, you know, the educational purposes, but developing the routine, because your normal lifestyle routine takes a U-turn. You know, you got to shift it. So,
yeah. And I mean, you know, everybody pays for their education, right?
One way or another.
You know, the truth is, though, is that the education that we're paying for right now is also making us money.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the, Lastly, thank you so much. Definitely going over time. What is the experience with your tenant buyers? Have all of them been positive? Even if they haven't, the ones that haven't been positive, was there anything that, you know, clued you in when you were first signing with them? Like, oh, this might not be a good person. But I guess just in, you don't, yeah, how are your tenants doing?
All the people that we've sold to, you know, they've been highly motivated to buy the home. Like, they are jazzed about buying this home. You know, they jump through all the hoops almost immediately. You know, we have them sign up for a Cozy account, which is what we use for our primary application process, because it allows you the opportunity to do background and credit checks, which we, you know, can just justify by saying, hey, look, this is what the park's going to want to know to allow you entrance. But yeah, everyone we sold to with our homes, you know, it's taken longer in some situations to sell than the other, but when they get in there, they pay on time. They're very proud to make that home their own. Yeah. You know, we give them the 30, 60, 90-day paperwork of things that, you know, we'd like to have them rehab. They are on top of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are not giving us any flack for this or that. I mean, they're your ideal people so far.
Thank you so much both for being here. Thank you so much for your time.
The ideas and advice given in today's episode are for entertainment purposes only. If you have future ideas or questions for upcoming episodes, please email us at support@mobilehomeinvesting.net. If you've enjoyed this podcast episode, the biggest compliment you can give is to like and share this podcast with your friends.